Bruce?
Thanks, Tom.
Well, that actually offers a nice segue into our reading of our gospel text for this time. We're looking at John, the Gospel of John, chapter 1, starting with verse 43. It's Epiphany right now. So in this blessed season, we make our focus the light of the world, the coming of that long-awaited, much-anticipated salvation of God, the fruition of God's intention to make good on His promises. The light has come, the light comes, the light will come again. This is the substance of our hope and our expectation. Darkness, still continues to be a reality in our world. It was a reality an all too evident reality in the world of Samuel. It continues to be an all too evident reality in our world too. But the darkness does not reign. The light reigns. He came. He comes. He will come again. This is our hope. We look forward to the day when our seeing of Him will be a greater seeing, because that when that day comes, the problem of the darkness will be removed from our experience, from the realities that define this world. So, here we are in Epiphany, celebrating the coming of the world as we await the final coming of the light of the world. All these things, I think, work nicely together to provide us with a way of appropriately appreciating the significance of this last unit of text in the first chapter of John, especially with attention to this statement of Jesus that comes at the very end of the unit here. Are you believing? Greater things than these will you see. It was suggested that here in the first chapter of John, Jesus is about the business of assembling the first company of His disciples. That's quite right, quite true. There's a connection then with this text and the Samuel text in that persons are being summoned, charged, commissioned, prepared, all of that's happening. But here's another thing that we can really enjoy, I think, especially in the context of our celebration of Epiphany, this statement of Jesus, greater things than these will you see. I mean, if they're just getting started, then it's just a beginning, and more is coming. In Jesus' day, Jesus' followers were made to see a day when they were privileged to enjoy a greater seeing. Our hope is a very similar hope. Ours is a hope of that day, of a similar day, when ours would be the privilege of the greater seeing that only comes when we end up seeing the light just as He is. So with that in mind, let's turn to the text. Verse 43, te epaureon, that's a substantized adverb there. Te marks the use of the substantized adverb. It's in the dative. It's feminine singular in dative because it's referring to a next day. So it's a temporal dative. On the next day, athelesen, he, Jesus, here's the aorist form of thelo, athelesen. Jesus desired exalthain, to depart. That's an aorist infinitive of exerchomai, the objective use of the infinitive then. Desired to depart eistein Galileon into Galilee, and he found kai huriske Philippon, Philip. He's been assembling disciples. He's still doing the work of this. He has gathered to himself two former disciples of the baptizer. One remains anonymous, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. That's probably the evangelist there. That's probably the beloved disciple, the anonymous one. The other former disciple of the Baptist who goes with Jesus at the encouragement of the Baptist is Andrew. Andrew disciples Peter. So there's a discipling Jesus and there are discipling disciples in chapter 1. Andrew disciples his brother Peter. Jesus, after this, will find Philip. Philip, in turn, will disciple Nathanael and bring Nathanael to Jesus. So this is much of what's going on in chapter 1. So here he is finding Philip. Heuriske, that present indicative active form of heurisko, is a first use of the historical present here in the text. And we're going to run into this over and over again here at the end of chapter 1. John is fond of the use of the historical present. If this is a fronting text form of some kind, then perhaps we should be paying attention to who's doing the finding or the talking here. Here it's Jesus doing the work of finding Philip. But it won't just be Jesus serving as subject of these historical presents. More later. And he found Philip. Kailege, another historical present, and he said, or Jesus said to him, auto ha Jesus, what did he say? Akaluthe mu, there's the present imperative of akalutheo, perhaps inceptive, get started in doing this new thing, follow me. Follow me, akaluthe moi. The verb takes the dative, so moi there is a dative form. Verse 44. Ein de ha Philippos, now Philip, was apa Bethsaida, from Bethsaida, ektes poleos, from the city Andreu of Andrew, Kai Petru, and Peter. So these guys know each other. We know that from the other Gospels too. But here, the connectedness of these persons is indicated. They're all coming from the same city. Verse 45. So Jesus has found and said to Philip, follow me. So he's done the work of calling this new disciple to the company of his disciples. Philip, in turn, is going to disciple another disciple. He's going to do what Jesus has done. There's a kind of following the example of Jesus going on here. Verse 45, heuriske, another historical present, Philippos, Philip found ton Nathanael, Nathanael, and said, it's the same verbs, right? And they continue to be historical presents. So if the activity of Jesus is being fronted in any of this, then the activity of the discipling disciple is also being fronted here. In likewise fashion then, Philip found Nathanael, kailege auto, and said to him, han ekrapsen mouses en to nomo, the one about whom Moses in the law wrote. Okay, egrapsen, here's indicative of grapho. But not just Moses wrote about this, long-awaited, much-anticipated, salvific figure. The prophets, too, did this. So, this appears to be the sum total of the testimony of the prophets. Going on here. They're saying, our Old Testament instructed us to await this person, and now we've found him. Our Bible. The one about whom Moses in the law wrote, and the prophets, hurekamen, perfect indicative of hurisko, we have found. With the suggestion of some present enduring significance to that finding. And who is he? Han is the object of the relative clause that is introduced by hun, the relative pronoun, serves offer at the very beginning of this sentence, an object clause, the object of hirekamen. More specification comes after the verb. So the one about whom Moses wrote and the prophets is Jesus, Yezun. He is son of Joseph, Huyon to Yosef. Now, we should probably pause to notice that some of this stuff kind of comes out of nowhere. They think they know who Jesus is. They think they know who Jesus' parents are. They think they know where Jesus comes from. They think they know they think they know it all. But Nathaniel's not going to express some reserve in all of this. And it's not a bad reserve. It's actually kind of a telling reserve that he offers. It's pretty remarkably early in the experience of the followers of Jesus so far. It's chapter 1. In no other gospel do these kind of remarkable, first receptions of Jesus go on this early in the story. What have they seen so far? What have they heard so far? What has he done so far? He hasn't done much of anything so far. All they've really seen so far and heard so far kind of started with the baptizer and what the baptizer had to say about Jesus. Then after that, days have gone by. There's a first day, a second day, a third day, and this is the fourth day in chapter 1. It goes that way in the narrative. On the next day, on the next day, on the next day. So it's day 4 here, and then we'll go into chapter 2 and there'll be yet another reference to a successive day. We won't trouble ourselves too much with much more than that about the days, but we should be noticing that this is the fourth of 4 days. The Baptist gets it started, as soon as the Baptist has done his work, and his work, of course, is consistent with, what's offered in the prologue as an indication of, what to expect of the baptizer, what we're especially supposed to be expecting of the baptizer, according to the prologue, is that the baptizer will especially testify. Less is his purpose, or is his kind of baptizing significance, greater is his testifying significance. He comes for the sake of testimony, in order to testify, in order that all might believe through him, that is to say, Jesus. This is why he comes, then, this baptizing figure, for the sake of testimony. So what happens very early on in the narrative proper, there in chapter 1, the baptizer offers the testimony, this is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world, he's the greater one, I'm the lesser one. In chapter 3, he'll say, this one must increase, I must decrease. Well, that's exactly how it goes in chapter 1. As soon as the baptizer does his work of testifying to Jesus, then Jesus takes the 4. 1, 2, 3, for 3 days the Baptist is around, but on day 4, he's gone. In days 2, 3, and 4 in chapter 1, Jesus is on the scene. Jesus is ascending. The Baptist is kind of fading into the background. The focus is all on Jesus, but again, what is it that causes the followers this early in the story to be imagining that they know this much about Jesus? He has basically done nothing and has basically said nothing. It's fairly remarkable. Not surprisingly, a fairly sensible, true Israelite is asking some decent questions about this Jesus. What causes us to be so sure that this Jesus is who we take him to be? Let's keep going. If the focus is on these things, who is he? He's the son of Joseph. Where does he come from? He comes from Nazareth. Time out. Is that the way it's supposed to be going? The answer is no. So as they focus on these questions of Jesus' earthly origins, you know, questions emerge. You know, issues of some problematic significance come. Jesus, of course, will address those. But it's telling. It's important for us to notice that this is kind of the rub. This is the mix in this first chapter. They will conclude that they know who they're dealing with, but this is not without its initial problems. So there's an all important first perception of Jesus that is quite correct. But there are also clear indications that their first reception of him involves some a need for seeing and knowing more. Let's see, where in the world were we? Jesus, son of Joseph, the one from Nazareth. One, two, three things we know about Jesus then. His name is Jesus, comma. That's an apposition to the objective clause that fronts the sentence here. Quiantu Yosef, that's the second thing that we know about Jesus. He's son of Joseph. That's also an apposition then. These are all, you know, accusatives of apposition. And then the third and last thing that we know about Jesus is actually the thing that kind of causes Nathaniel to get, you know, to have some questions. He's the one, here we have the substantized prepositional phrase, the one from Nazareth. So that's the third thing that they know about Jesus so far. Verse 46, and Kai Epen Auto Nathanael, and Nathanael said to him, to Philip, out of Nazareth, Ek Nazareth, Dunatai, the form of Dunamai, followed by a form of Tis, but here Tis does not have an accent, so it's not an interrogative. It's an indefinite pronoun. Maybe the difference is slight, but we shouldn't be translating here what good thing. It's not an interrogative. It's an indefinite pronoun. A certain good thing. Any kind of a good thing able, dunatai, to be Anai, there's the complementary use of the infinitive with dunamai, out of Nazareth. The fronted prepositional phrase, out of Nazareth, you know, is fronted that way because that's what's prompted the suggestion of a problematic issue. How can this be? That the one about whom Moses wrote in the law and the prophets too had things to say about him is coming from Nazareth. That just doesn't compute. Let's see. Philip said to him, historical present, Lege, auto, ha, Philippos. Well, yeah, and actually this isn't the first time somebody told somebody else to come and see. Erhu, present imperative of Erchemai, followed by Kai, Ide, and see. Now, Ide can either be an imperative, like Erhu here. Erhu is manifestly a present imperative. You know, it looks like here too. It looks like it's inceptive. Or ida can be an interjection. You know, check it out, behold, you know, something like that. Well, because ida here, and usually, or at least a handy way of telling the difference between the use of the form as an interjection and the use of the form as an imperative is to look to see what happens after this form. If a nominative follows, it's an interjection. If an accusative follows, it's an imperative. But here we're not helped in that way. What helps us is the imperative that precedes. Come and see. Well, yeah, this isn't come and check it out. An interjection. It's one imperative after another imperative. Come and see. Eden ha Jesus, verse 47. Eden ha Jesus, Jesus, saw Tan Nathanael, saw Nathanael er Chamanon coming. There's a nice present stem participle of attendance circumstance. Saw him engaged in the activity of coming, prosauton to him, and said, there's another historical present, kai lege, and said concerning him. So he's saying this not at him exactly, but concerning him to the others that are there. Concerning him. Okay, now comes the use of id as an interjection. Check it out. Behold, id. Truly, there's an adverb. Alethos, that is the adverb. Israelites, an Israelite, that's in the nominative, so id is an interjection. An Israelite in whom, and takes the dative, so the relative pronoun following is in the dative, in whom guile there is not, dolos uk estin. Well, yeah, because the one who comes to Jesus bears no guile in this gospel. Verse 48, Nathanael said to him, lege, historical present, auto Nathanael. Nathanael said to him, he doesn't say how, he says puffin, whence, you know, from where are you knowing me? Me genoskes. Jesus answered, apokrithe, heirs passive deponent form of apokrinomai, followed by the subject, Jesus. Jesus answered, kai apen, and said auto to him. Pra tu plus the infinitive follows. There's the use of the infinitive with the preposition and the definite article for the sake of a temporal clause. Before Philip phoneoed you, phonesai is the aorist infinitive of phoneo. Philippon is in the accusative because the subject in the infinitive needs to appear that way. Set is the direct object. Before Philip called you. Unta appears after the infinitive, after phonesai. That's a participle of ame. It's an interesting use of the participle here because it's, you know, maybe a less than familiar form, perhaps a somewhat unexpected form. It's present participle active, but then after that, it's masculine, singular, and accusative of all things. Well, you know, the puzzle goes away as soon as we figure out that the referent here is the prior se. Before Philip called you se. Now se is that second person singular pronoun, you. Jesus is talking to Nathanael here, so you is Nathanael. Before Philip called you, you being under the fig tree. So, yeah, the subject of the part, or the specified referent of the participle is you, Nathanael. It's in the accusative because the participle has to agree with its referent in gender, number, and case. So that's why it's weird. That's why it's in the accusative. As soon as we figure that out, the rest of it, I think, becomes fairly straightforward. Before Philip called you, maybe this is temporal, while you were under hypotain sukane, under the fig tree, I saw you, Adon se. There's the aorist of hora'o, I saw you. So, this is such an enigmatic statement. It's really tough for us to know what Jesus is, you know, kind of presuming to know or presuming to call to Nathanael's attention. But at a minimum, we should be noticing this. the confession that Nathaniel offers at the end of this chapter isn't a new confession. You know, when he gets to saying, lost my spot, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel, he's not saying a new thing. They've already said this about him. The one about whom Moses and the prophets wrote, that's Son of God. That's the royal king. That's the Son of David. Son of David is Son of God. Son of God is Son of David. So Son of David is king. And all this stuff goes together. They're not saying anything. It's just different ways of saying the same thing about Jesus. They take him to be Messiah here in chapter 1. That's what they know about him. That's what they figure they know about him. But there's much more for them to know and to learn and to see. So in this Epiphany season, yeah, more later, better stuff, you know, greater things later, wonderful things, you know, final things later. What kind of prompts Nathaniel to, you know, take heart and to trust Jesus? Even before Philip came to Nathaniel while he was under the fig tree, but so even before Philip or Nathaniel was in a position to know anything about Jesus from Philip, Jesus knew at least something about Nathaniel. And you know, the you know, at a minimum, this reference to a prior, you know, kind of situatedness of Nathaniel under a fig tree causes Nathaniel to realize that Jesus knows things about Nathaniel that no ordinary person would be in a position to know. That alone is special, even supernatural. Perhaps there's not much more than that going on with this moment. But no ordinary man could have known Nathaniel before Nathaniel showed up, let alone known that Nathaniel was previously situated under a, you know, a fig tree, even before Philip came to him. So something like that, perhaps. So Nathaniel answered him, "Apakrithe auto Nathanael." We need to wrap up. Rabbi, you know, teacher, rabbi, rabbi, you are the Son of God. Se ehaquias tu theu, you are the King of Israel. Su basilus e tu Israel. Jesus answered and said to him, "Apakrithe Jesus kai epen auto." You know, boy, we got to quit, but I want to say this quick. The gospel begins with, you know, a remarkable confession and a remarkable believing. It's going to end this way, too, with Thomas. Well, with very similar sorts of confessions or issues being expressed by the featured characters offering remarkable confessions. And Jesus' response to both of these confessions, both at the beginning and at the end, is to ask a question. You know, and with the framing of the question comes the suggestion of a need for the confessor to still know and see more, or at least to perceive more from the moment. So whether we're talking about Nathaniel or whether we're talking about Thomas at the end, Jesus continues to be about the business of suggesting to both that there's more for them to know, more for them to comprehend. More for them to learn, more for them to see. I'm not done with you yet, he kind of says, with both of them. You know, the way things begin is the way things end, the way things end, the way things begin. So Jesus says to Nathanael, "Because I said to you, hatte epon soi, that I saw you under the fig tree, hatte eidon se hupakato te sukes, are you believing?" Now, at the end of the gospel, Jesus is going to say, "Are you believing because you have seen?" And then there's a suggestion of more to know, more to understand. Blessed are those who understand that believing is not about seeing, but there's a greater seeing that goes on even without the eyes, and then there's the greater seeing that's going to go on even at the end of time. What does he say here at the beginning? Greater things, mezo, that's kind of an unusual neuter plural accusative form of the comparative adjective, It doesn't decline here, so you don't easily see that this is neuter, plural, and accusative. Greater things than these, two-tone, you will see, opse. And he said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, opseste, you will see heaven, ton uranon, and then the perfect participle, anaogata, having been opened, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. It's the Jacob thing. They're going to be given to see this too. You know, angels, chapter 20, and heaven now open, no longer, our access to the heavenly sanctuary is now made clear. He enters by the door, he becomes the door when he does his work. It's an open door. It's heaven open. Now the dwelling place of God being with men and all of that sort of thing. So in the midst of the Epiphany season, we have some very nice things for us to be focusing on as we attempt to work with the delightful themes of the season in anticipation of the final coming of the light of the world. So thanks very much for your attention. Thank you, sir.